Hear your favorite NFL legends sharing their stories and insights every week right here on Thursday Night Tailgate with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazeri. Take it away, guys.
Once the door is locked, there's no way out.
And now back with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is former Steelers Pro Bowl linebacker Greg Lloyd. Let me remind you about Greg's background. He is from Miami, Florida, played his college ball at Fort Valley State in South Georgia, where he was a three-time All-Southern Intercollegiate Athletic Conference selection, a three-time team defensive MVP, and as a senior, he was the conference player of the year and a first-team Sheridan All-American. He was, amazingly, a sixth-round draft pick by the Pittsburgh Steelers in 1987. Played in the league from 87 to 98, all in Pittsburgh except for his last season in Carolina. He was selected to five straight Pro Bowls from 1992 to 1996. He was the AFC Defensive Player of the Year in 1994. He's a member of the Steelers' all-time team, and we are honored that he is back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Greg, Chris, and Bob here. Thanks for coming back on the show.
Hi, Greg.
Hey, guys. How's it going? How's Chris? Hi, Bob. How you guys doing?
All right, Greg. The question is, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, man. I'm hanging in here, making this knee a little bit better. They've got me in some little contraption here that I have to sit in, and I'd rather get all my teeth pulled than to be sitting in it, but it's a necessary evil.
Listen, I apologize for, I know I was supposed to be on the show, I believe it was last week, and I think I got, we got a mess. Kind of mixed up here. I took some meds and it just knocked me out, guys. So I apologize. Usually, if I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do something. So all day long, I've been telling my wife, don't you let me forget. I'm supposed to be on the show. We've been setting alarms and all kind of things. So it's all good, man. But I appreciate you going to be very cool, man. It was good listening to Tim just now. Tim Worley. How's that Worley Bird? It's good listening.
No, Tim's fantastic. Great friend of the show. He's been on with us several times. But, yeah, he's doing some great things out there as a motivational speaker now and relaying his story. So it's great catching up with him.
Absolutely.
Greg, I want to start out our time with you tonight by going back to when you were drafted. You know, a guy coming out of, Fort Valley State, what were people telling you coming into the draft with respect to, who was interested in you and what round they thought you might go in?
Well, it was a lot more simpler, with all this TV and social media now that these guys, they're coming out and everybody thinking they're like, superstars and things of that nature. And I it's great for these guys and it's great for their families and stuff like that. At the end of the day, you got to show up and you got to play. That's how I looked at it. And, back then, that's what it was kind of about. I got courted by the Cowboys for the longest. I thought I was going to the Dallas Cowboys. Grew up being a Cowboys fan. Like I said, I don't tell a lot of people that. And everybody in my house was a Steelers fan. And it wasn't until back then they had, 13, 14 rounds or something like that. And you only got to see the first six or seven rounds on TV. Maybe the first three rounds. I think the first three rounds were shown on TV, something like that. And then after that goes off, I was just sitting, at the time, it was my, I was sitting in the apartment, with my girlfriend from college. And we were just sitting in the apartment waiting. The guys do. Guys were calling you, pretending that they were, everything but, player, but NFL guys, and, playing jokes on you. And then finally, I got a call, and I had no clue. I really did. I had no clue. At that point, I was a small kid coming from a small college. I knew I played big. I knew I had the talent to play in the league. But, after going to a couple of bowl games and, sizing up other guys, it was like, okay, I can do this. I just didn't know where I wanted to go. I just knew that all I needed was an opportunity. Pittsburgh called, and I think it was Tom Modrak at the time called and, said, hey, Greg, we just chose you in the sixth round. What do you think of that? And it was like, hey, man, I was happy to be anywhere. And, you say my first 2 years were kind of, basically a statistic because I hurt my left knee and my right knee. So I really wasn't supposed to play football anymore, man, and just got blessed. God blessed me to rehab the way I did and came back and, and played and did all those things that, that I did, all the stats and stuff. So, for me, it wasn't really, all this like you're seeing on TV now. It was more like, just want to play, anywhere. I just want to play, And back then, your confidence wasn't, you didn't have all those people in here. But my agent had basically told me, hey, listen, if you But the stats that you had coming out of college, if you're at Georgia, Georgia Tech, or anywhere like that, oh, yeah, you're going to be easy second, third round draft choice. But they view Division II black college football as if you were playing somewhere else, you're it's not the same. And so, you come out with that, you kind of got a chip on your shoulder right away. But he was right. He basically told me, he said, I'm looking at you anywhere between fifth and sixth round. He said, you're fifth and sixth round. He said, that's solid. He said, because of, where you come from. They don't know that you can play with these other guys. And it kind of ticks you off, but it was on point. And then after that, like you say, you got to go out and you got to do the work. You got to put the work in. And you got to prove to everybody else that regardless if I'm a first rounder or a ninth rounder, I'm playing with everybody else. They're putting their gear on just like I am. I'm just not going to let anybody outwork me. So that was my thing the entire time I was there. Regardless if I went to, Pro Bowl after Pro Bowl after Pro Bowl, it was just like you just want everybody to know that I'm here. It's real. Fort Valley is real. We got real talent there. And I don't know if everybody thinks like me, but, if I'm the only one that gets to come out of Fort Valley, they're going to know. Where my school goes, because I'm going to outwork everybody, and I'm going to show up, on Sunday. And that's the mentality. These kids, they kind of get it. But, like I said, they got so much, support around them and other things around them. So, you can easily get distracted, but I think some of these guys are pretty well grounded, in that, because, just coming from the schools that they came from. So, that was my experience, and it was short-lived, because it was like, hey, you're in tomorrow, you're here. Get ready to go practice, and that was kind of it.
And Greg, to build off of something that you alluded to a moment ago, and we've talked a little bit about this when we've had you on the show before, but you were injured the majority of your first two seasons. Having come in as a sixth-round pick, you must have done something pretty special in training camp or in OTAs or in something that captured the coaching staff's eye and captured their imagination for them to sort of hang with a sixth-round pick through two seasons where, like you said, you were largely just a statistic. What did you do that really captured their attention?
Well, actually, that's a tough one. I mean, it really is. That's a tough one for me. I would have to say, like I say, my thing was my work ethic. I mean, when I came to Pittsburgh, I was probably weighing about 200 and, 218, 219 tops, maybe 220 soaking wet. And I was bench pressing, just as much as the offensive linemen were, but I could run. I was running as fast, I was covering backside of backfield and things of that nature. I could pass. So I was a little guy. They were throwing me around, but I was still sticking my head in there and things of that nature. So what they saw, I can't really say. I just think that they knew they had a kid that whatever they asked me to do, that's what I did. I mean, if they said, hey, line up on the tight end, I line up on the tight end. Line up on fullback, line up on fullback. Do this. That was the deal. And I just remember the very first scout. I don't know if you remember Tom Donahue. Tom Donahue was the very first person that I ran for in the NFL. And he came down, he called my coach and he said, hey, we're coming down, you guys got a linebacker there, we're looking at, da-da-da. And Coach Porter called me and says, hey, there's a scout from Pittsburgh wants you to run the time. And I hadn't been, running or anything like that. And it was on break. And so I just remember the morning, when Tom showed up, it was raining. Well, it had rained. It was still lightly raining. And we were on our football field, which was grass. I found a pair of my cleats in my locker, went out, ran a timing for him. And he looked at me, and I thought it was like, okay, I don't know if that's a good look or bad look or what. And then he says, has anybody else, came down here and ran your time? And I said, no. But then, if you're smart enough, you start thinking, he saw something. He saw something, there. And so, he didn't tell me what I ran, but I knew it was pretty good because I knew what I had run at a, at another, at a black college, I had been at. I knew what my timing was, but I was running on turf then. This was on grass. And so I just knew some things were going to happen. But like you said, back then, just prior to, OTAs, we call them minicamps. Yeah, they call them OTAs now. But going to minicamp, we weren't allowed to put pads on or anything like that. So they didn't see me hit. They didn't see me do any of that stuff like that. It was just basically, a hustle. A willingness to learn, a willingness to, hey, listen, I'll play wherever you want me to play, kind of thing. And that was the deal with me. And I think the Steelers like that. They were looking for that, and like I said, I didn't have that you know, I'm, you know, hey, all you guys from, you know, all these, you know, North Carolinas and Georgias and all these, y'all come on, get in front of me because I'm so scared. You know, so I was my mentality was, okay, I know y'all went to D1 schools and all that, but I'm gonna tell you what, if you come over here in front of me, you better have your act together because, you know, I say, I ain't no pushover. That was my mentality. And it was my mentality from the day I got there to the day I retired.
Bob, questions for Greg?
Yeah, that was going to lead into my question, Greg. Your confidence was legendary. And after being drafted, you kind of alluded to it already, but did the team, the Steelers, say to you, we want you to either work on this, or did you know what you had to work on to become the great player that you did?
Well, I mean, you know, when you compare it to, you know, other guys, like I said, when you get there, I mean, we got it. The Lamberts. You have the Russells, you know, you got the Hammers, you know, and then, you know, I've got Chili Cole there. I've got Mike Merriweather, Brian Hinkle, David Little. I mean, we just got a ton of just super linebackers. All of them weren't physically superior. Some were, but some of them were just from a standpoint of not ever getting out of position. And so you got to go, okay. You know, it's like if I was making in a science lab and I want to make a mad linebacker. So I'm going to take a little bit of this from Lambert and put it in here, and I'm going to take this over here from Hammer, and I'm going to put it in here, and I'm going to take this from D. Little, I'm going to put it over here, and Merriweather, and you just keep doing it. So that's what I did. I was like, I watched. You know, if Mike Merriweather was running to a drill, I was running to a drill. If Robin Cole was sitting there saying, hey, man, you know, this ain't right. This ain't, I'm like, okay, what are you talking about ain't right? You know, what's going on? Yeah, how do I figure this out? And then David Little was really, you know, my guy because, you know, we kind of connected more. And Little, you know, one of the things we used to always do, guys mess up. He's like, hey, get in that playbook. You get in that playbook. And so I took that literal. You know, I mean, guys were just, you know, they're just getting into business, but I took it literal. So, you know, getting in your playbook, and it wasn't something, like I said, that we did a lot of when we was in college. You just knew the plays, and you ran them. But here you come into a different system. You have to, like I said, you got to get in your playbook. So I wanted to be the guy that, like you said, I never want to be out of position. I wanted, you know, to be around the ball every time the ball, you know, where it was thrown down the field, the other side of the ball, you know, where, that's what I wanted to do. And I knew the only way I could do that was I had, you know, I every year, every day, I had to get better. And then just talking to these guys, and then of course, you know, I had the privilege of having Joe Green as, you know, as a defensive line coach when I was there. I get to pick his brain about, you know, attitude, you know, and how to do things. You know, me and Joe used to get so mad at me all the time because I used to throw my helmet and stuff like that. And I used to laugh at him. I go, dude, do you know all the stuff I've watched you do? And you mad at me for throwing my helmet? Now that's what I said on the inside. I never would say that to him, you know, because, of course, that's Joe Green. But, you know, you take it from that, you know, and from that moment, man, like you said, you know, you never see yourself as, you know, Greg Lloyd, Division II black college guy, Fort Valley State College. Oh, by the way, he's captain of our defense. Oh, he's the leader of this. You know, you never saw it that way. I just wanted guys to know that, hey, listen, if you're playing with me, and if you're going to play with me, you better get your act together because, you know, I'm playing. You know, and this is how it's going to be. You know, we're going to play, and this is the speed we're going to play at. This is the speed we're going to practice at. And if people don't like it, then they don't like it. You know, too bad. And that was that, man. So, you know, most of my teammates, they were cool. I mean, they understood it. Like you said, it was one of those things where guys knew that if, you know, either I was going to motivate you or I was going to take you off. That was kind of deal. It's like, you know, there was no in-between. It's like, he's going to motivate you. You know, it'll make you want to play, and if you don't want to play, it's going to probably tick you off because, you know, he's going to get you over here. And nobody was exempt from that. And that was the cool thing about it. You know, we had teams like that, and Coach Noel, you know, like I said, one of the things that I loved about him was that he made it so that he wanted all of his guys to know everything everybody was doing on every down. You needed to know every position on that field, what everybody was doing. And that was one of the things that I loved about him. And then what was so funny is that when BC came in, Kyle came in, he was the exact same way. It was like, you know, just giving you a test in front of the guy. Hey, you know, on second down and da-da-da-da, we're playing this team this week. What do they like to do on third down when they get inside and stuff? You know, it's all this is in our notes. We had these notes all week. And he's just making sure that you're in your book. So I love that. You know, you love that. And you look forward to it. So, you know, you can never be lax. So you always had to, you know, get into your playbooks. You had to always, you know, keep your head, you know, in your playbook, making sure that, you know, that you're on point so that you know what, you know, like everybody was doing. And when you can do that, man, you can play fast.
And Greg, we mentioned at the beginning of the show, you went to 5 Pro Bowls, that first one in 1991. You know, it's a great honor, obviously, to get into the league, make a team. But when you become a Pro Bowl player, you're among the best among the best. What was that feeling like, the first one in 91?
Well, you know, it's kind of cool because you got to understand this now. I come into the league in 87. I have a total reconstruction knee surgery. So my 87, 88 season is gone. So 88, 89, second year, like you say, I'm chasing, what, four preseason games, chasing around the Cunningham, and, you know, that's all you were doing to him. You were never catching him. You were chasing him. And chasing around the Cunningham, and then I popped my knee, you know, tore my ACL. So that's 89, 90. You know, that, I mean, that's 88, 89 season. So you got between 90 and 91. So basically you're looking at my very first, like you call it my year and a half, of playing football, I'm in Pro Bowl. I mean, how many guys, you know, back then can actually say that? You take it. My first 2 years I'm hurt, and then 91, 92 is my first Pro Bowl. It's like, wow. So I've been in the league basically 2 years, and I'm in my first, you know, my first Pro Bowl. Not a lot of guys can say that coming from D2, you know, being, you know, 2 knee surgeries and things of that nature. So for me, it was like, you know, it was a statement just saying, you know, I'm here, but it ain't enough. You know, I've arrived, but it ain't enough. How do I get back here again? How do I get back here again? How do I get back here again? And that's the push. You know, once you see that and you experience that, you always want it, you know, and stuff like that. But, you know, like you said, in that game, you're going to always, you're playing hard, man, you're going to get hurt. You know, you're going to get it. You just got to keep playing hard. You got to keep practicing hard. And that's part of it. But, you know, I mean, what a great, you know, way of saying, hey, listen, you know, here's what we're going to do. We appreciate the talent. We appreciate what you've been doing in the league. So guess what? We're sending you to a Pro Bowl. This is something that's voted on by your peers. This is not something that's voted on by, you know, some guy that don't like you, some guy that, you know, you told off or something. It's by your peers, man. And, you know, I mean, like you said, these are the guys that, you know, you played against, guys that knew that, you know, that you gave the business to. And like you say, they couldn't deny it. And that was the thing. And you know, we all voted on, and listen, we played against some guys, man, that, hey, listen, I can't get around this guy. I got to vote for him. You know, this guy right here, boy, he runs hard, man. I had 2 or 3 headaches on this guy. Got to vote. I mean, that was the thing. So when guys are voting for you, you hope that they're doing the same thing. And like I said, what an honor, you know, that the other guys from the other teams that you played against in your division thought enough of you to say, hey, listen, he's one of the best. We got to vote him in there. So that's cool.
Greg, one more before we let you go. We got our next guest, Tommy John, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Tommy in just a minute. But, Greg, we've talked a little bit about this before, and we've talked about it with LaVon Kirkland, who has been a wonderful friend of the show for many, many years. But and LaVon has told the story about, you know, how he would, you know, coming in as a rookie, getting the defensive calls, right? And he would make the call in the huddle, and sometimes you and Kevin would look at him and go,
no,
you know what,
we would change it.
We're not running that, and decide to do something else. Did Cower or Capers or anyone ever come over to you, or will you pull you and Kevin aside and go, what are you doing?
No, you know, the cool thing about it, like you say, you know, when you have good coaches who understand that they have good players and leaders on the field, you know what they do? They let those players play, and they let those players lead. You know, we're not ever going to put ourselves in positions or put the team in a position, you know, that's going to hurt us. But what coaches do sometimes, coaches tend to overcoach. You know, back then, you know, we had, I mean, come on, we got Dom Capers, we have Dick LeBeau, we have Marvin Lewis, and we have, Bill Cower, along with, you know, other guys, you know, that John Mitchell, who's still there. You know, this is the group that we have, all head coaches. All of them become head coaches, coordinators at some point in life. So we had a tremendous amount of coaching talent on that sideline. But sometimes these coaches got to the point where their intellect kind of overrode some situations. So it was like, hey, listen, you know, I'm a big fan of that, you know, KISS, keep yourself stupid. So we playing teams and, you know, we're running base defense and they're not scoring. They're not moving the ball. And then all of a sudden we may have come up with a new defense that we didn't practice. And then, oh, they're giving that signal from the sideline. And I'm looking at Kirk Caller. I said, oh no, we are not running that. We ran that thing three times in practice. And every time we ran it, somebody did something wrong. So I'm like, we're not running that. And Kirk Caller said, listen, we ran our base defense, break. And we would lead it home. And we didn't care what he called. I'm running base defense. You know, and it would be a call, you know, something Sam, Will, this, whatever. And that's what it would be. And, you know, and we would hit them for 2 or 3 yards, you know, or stop them and come off the field. And it was always so funny because coach knew we changed it. But you know what they would always do? They would always go to LeVon. LeVon, that's not the play we call. And he would just sit there. And he was so cool. Kirk would just sit there with his hands, you know, just kind of shrug his shoulders and stuff like that. He would never say, Greg changed the play, Kevin changed the play, and all that. He would just take it, man. That's the one thing he loved about it. He's like, listen, you know, we understand that you're the play caller. You're not the captain out here, and you ain't got no tenure out here yet. So call the play. But if it ain't something we like, yeah, we're going to change you now. Like, yeah, you know, it's not for the detriment of the team, but a lot of times, like you said, coaches were, you know, they were doing a little bit of overcoaching, and I think they just wanted to see if something would work. But like I said, most of the time we got enough defense. We got burnt for 20 yards, 17 yards, stuff like that. And we always had to listen to Dom Capers on Monday talk about how many yards we were, you know, from being number one, or how many yards we were behind, you know, stuff like this. Like, listen, that's why we're behind, because y'all keep calling these crazy offenses that we don't work on. So we rectified that. And they understood it, you know, like I said. But there was never any hard feelings. Coaches never, you know, the whole idea was to win. You know, and that's what it was all about there. It was about winning. And they trusted us and we trusted them, you know, to a certain degree when it came to, you know, certain plays on the field. And now, you know, we all got along. We made it work.
Greg, before we let you go, remind our listeners what you're doing now.
I'm doing nothing. I'm sitting on the couch getting ready to put my back in this crazy thing. That's what I'm doing. I'm sitting on the couch. I'm getting ready to put my leg back in this thing for 10 minutes in, 10 minutes out, and I'm trying to find me a song in my head that I can sing so I don't say something crazy. But, no, I have, like you said, man, I taught martial arts for so many years. And like you said, I thought when I retired to teaching and things of that nature. So I'm literally retired now. I mean, if somebody asked me to come do something, I come and do it. But I'm like, I don't do social media. You know, I think that's where, you know, a lot of I think it's good, but, you know, there's so much, you know, people, you know, hiding behind that and stuff. I think it's so much cowardice inside. So people who have my number like you guys, you call me. You call me, you know I answer my phone or I text you back. People who don't have my phone number, chances are I don't want to talk to you. That's usually how it works.
Hey, good.
Well, Greg, we certainly appreciate the fact that you came back on the show tonight. You know, you're one of my all-time favorite players. I got my Greg Lloyd jersey on right now. It's such a thrill to be able to talk to you and have you share your stories. Thank you for being here.
Hey, that's cool, man. I'm going to be with LeVon on the 20th of May in Pittsburgh together. We got our guest session together, so I get a chance to hang out with the big man.
Right. There you go. Greg, take care, my friend. Hope that knee heals up soon. We look forward to the opportunity, hopefully, to catch up with you again real soon. In between now and then, all the best to you and your family.
Hey, not a problem, guys. And you guys do a great job, man. Thank you guys for having me again.
Thank you, Greg. Take care.
All right.
That is the great Greg Lloyd, and like I say, very sincere. One of my favorite players of all time. I love watching his highlights. I loved watching him play every Sunday, and it's one of the great thrills of being able to do this show to Bob, to have a guy like Greg Lloyd join us as often as he has, and we hopefully get the opportunity to catch up with him and LeVon Kirkland again here real soon.
Yeah, every time we talk to him, Chris, I say the same thing. I would have wanted him on my team.
Yes.